Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Excuse me, boy, is it hot in here or is it just you?
I'm sorry, did you just say, is it hot in here or is it just me?
Yep. If you like it, there's more where that came from.
Are you for real?
I've been asked that question many times, and by women a lot more naked than you. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me this time is returning guest, Danny Ulrich. What's going on?
I'm good. How are you doing on this great, fabulous day?
I am doing pretty well. On the subject of this episode, I was going to try and make an impotence joke, but I was like, nah, yeah. That's not going to go over.
That was my joke, too, but I didn't want to start the meeting by announcing that I'm had the other eye problem. You know, like, men don't like to do that. You
can't
know?
Get the old Evan Rude cranking or whatever.
No. Can't pump the iron through or whatever.
Let's not delve any deeper into this other than what we're going to be covering. But yeah, we are on season 7, episode 18. What's up, Doc? This one written by Brian Pollock and Mert Rich, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, March 30th, 1989. When Carla suggests that Sam is no longer the stud machine he used to be, he vows to sleep with the next woman who enters the bar. Enter Dr. Sheila Rydell, a psychiatrist friend of the Cranes, who wants nothing to do with Sam after all of his pathetic pickup lines. Taking the advice of Cliff and Carla, Sam approaches Dr. Rydell as a patient claiming to be suffering from impotency, hoping that she'll have the therapeutic touch to heal him. That blows up in his face, but she does agree to a date with him. After the date, at Sam's insistence, Dr. Rydell gives him her diagnosis that all Sam thinks about and works towards is sex. Despite this assessment, however, she is willing to sleep with him, figuring he must be pretty good in bed if that's his sole preoccupation. Disgusted and dismayed, Sam asks Rebecca if she agrees with the diagnosis. Rebecca takes pity and tries to help Sam recall another interest that isn't related to women, and they come up with exactly one, the Three Stooges. And to celebrate this psychiatric breakthrough, they smack each other in the nose. All right, Danny, what did you think about this episode?
It was pretty good. It's the first real Sam-centric one I've had since the Diane days. So, mm-hmm. But overall, this is a strong season. If you've gone through, there's a lot of real positive ones. It's going to be interesting hearing your rankings at the end of the season about which ones are your favorite, because I really don't think there's a real weak one this season. No. I think it's really their peak for Cheers this season, and I think most of season 8 mm-hmm. are peak Cheer seasons. It starts to dip a bit for me for 9 through 11, but that was just more for personal reasons. I've discussed before, I fell out of the show those couple of years just because I had other things going on in my life at that time. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't home to watch it on Thursdays, and I didn't have time to record it or anything, and so I caught up those on, you know, syndication now. So I didn't fall in love with those couple of seasons, you know, at the end. But, you know, this is, like I said, right here, 7 and 8, we're in the peak. So I really find hard episodes to think are really weak or very low quality.
Yeah, and I mean, I think season 8 might be my favorite. The seasons after that, without getting into too much analysis of those episodes, because obviously we're not there yet and we're going to spend time talking about this one, but if there's any dip in quality of the last couple seasons, I might attribute it to Rebecca not being written as strongly. Mm-hmm. And in as much as she is the female lead and she's like one of the anchors of the show, that the balance between her neuroses and her, you know, competency is really a little bit out of whack, and mm-hmm. and becomes a little bit more of a caricature of herself. The highs with Rebecca are extraordinarily high in some of those later episodes, but the floor is a little bit lower too, which is unfortunate. But I don't want to get into that because we're talking about this season 7 right. episode. And this is another one that, I always kind of remember just because of the subject matter and, like, we're dealing with Sam's, what will later on be kind of like diagnosed and identified as a sexual compulsion in a much more serious light towards the end of the series. But for now, we're kind of looking at it still as a bit of a joke and a bit of like his Lothario-ness, his kind of his, you know, fixation with sex is still kind of something to be championed by the gang in this season, as opposed to just right. kind of being a little bit sad. But again, casting way into the future of the series.
Yeah. It goes with that, you know, season one Sam, without the street smarts yet in him, but like more just like, how many women can I bet, you know, and things like that. But it's still a little bit tagging Rebecca, but not as much. I mean, the teasers into that, you know, it's more Sam, like, I'm going to get that woman in some way, somehow.
But I also, I have to say, going into this episode, I was a little bit more trepidatious, just because looking at this as a modern context and the way we view mm-hmm. characters like Sam today, I was like, how is this one going to age? How is this one going to look today? Like, is this going to be really cringy with the way he, you know, looks at women, with the way he treats Dr. Rydell and everything like that? And that ended up not really being my problem with this episode. I do have a problem with it, but it didn't ruin it for me, and I will kind of come back to that one later. Okay. But we'll get into this one now. So the teaser, as we start off with Rebecca, she has this new promotional idea, and by new, I mean it's as old as time, as Cliff kind of points out. They have a jar that Woody has painstakingly filled with jelly beans and counted all of them, and the whole deal is whoever can guess the right number of jelly beans in the jar gets a free trip to Atlantic City. And they, like Cliff is even like kind of pokes fun at her, like it was like this whole, like, this is kind of a tired gag, what are you doing with that? And she's like, no, how does she phrase it, like, corny is in these days.
Yeah.
And she talks about how, like, people are longing for nostalgia. They want to go back to the innocence of their teenage years. And Woody's like, yeah, the 70s were really a good time, weren't they?
Yes. Because it was supposed to be 1989, so right. What is it? How old is Rebecca, they're thinking, you know?
Right. Yeah, I was thinking there was like a little bit of like casting, okay, when does he think, how old does she think it was? But then also like kind of like, the 70s were a little bit trivial. Well, I don't know if that was necessarily the innocence of America during that.
No, no, I think even the jelly
bean thing, Watergate era. I'm not sure. Yeah. If that's what.
I know the jelly bean thing is like the 50s, you know. But yeah, I understand. Yeah, yes.
Also probably maybe just a little bit of like Woody in his own youth. I mean, he was a teenager in the 70s at least for this. But yes. So Cliff is like, all right, I'm just gonna guess 3,500. And she's like, Woody, is that the right number? He's like, nope. And he takes a beat, and then he's like, you're off by 163. And she's like, you're not supposed to say that. And she's like, we need to recount or add more jelly beans to it to change the number. She's like, do we have any more? And he's like, yeah, there's a whole bag down at the end of the bar. And they look over, and Norm has just polished off the last one. He's throwing the bag away. He's like, I hate when the black ones get stuck in your teeth.
Well, you can't leave any food around Norm, so, you know.
After the teaser, Sam, he's like, hey, everybody, just watch this. I want your attention. And he knocks on the office door, and Rebecca comes out, and he's like, do you want to go out with me? She's like, no. She's like, she has a cold or something. He's like, how about next week? I'm busy next week. How about the week after that? And she's like, maybe. And she closes the door in his face, and Sam's all smiles, just looking at his so kind. He's like, you saw it. You were there. I just scored a maybe. And this is what he is reduced to. And they're like, yeah. Carla's like, you know, she says he's no longer this desirable ladies' man that he used to be. And she's like, you're nothing but Clavin in a good shirt.
Yes. This is what I was talking about, where it's close to the early years, because it's a lot more the ragging, you know, Carla ragging on Sam, like, why are you just after Rebecca? Just like how he was like, oh, why are you always after Diane? You know, it's like, you're better than that. And of course, but then she throws herself more than, you know, she normally does, throw herself at him, you know, which the jokes that go in there for the next few minutes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I'll sleep with the next person that goes through that door, the next woman that falls in. She goes, I'll be right back.
She rips off her apron. Sherry, or no, she runs to the door. She's like, I'll be right back. And he's like, no, 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 Carla, employees don't count. She pulls off her apron. She's like, I quit. But she's too late. She's running. As she opens the door, an attractive woman walks through, and she's like, we're closed. Get out. And it's like, no, it's too late. And this is our guest star of the episode, Dr. Sheila Riedel, who is played by the actress Madeline Smith Osborne. And just some of her IMDb credits. Her first appearance was actually in the movie Urban Cowboy. She also appeared in the movies Funny Farm, All of Me, The Super, and the TV movie The Plot to Kill Hitler.
The two films I know from it are, well, in All of Me, I remember her in it, but like Urban Cowboy, because I'm an Urban Cowboy fan, so I like that movie. And Funny Farm, I think, is an underrated Chevy Chase comedy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that's a good one, too.
Yeah.
So that's the two films I mostly remember her for, though. So, and I think, and of course, you got me on another episode with a very attractive brunette actress. So I'm like, wow. Okay.
Just for you. That's what I was saying.
Thank you.
And, you know, Sam is, you know, getting ready. He's doing his whole thing, you know, throwing, like, cologne in his hands or something, like washing up and everything, getting ready. And he says something to Norm and Cliff or something. He's like, if you watch very closely, you'll notice that no time does my hand actually leave her body. And then he walks over. I gotta say, I think I know this line not just from Cheers. Like, I've heard this before, and it's such a bad pickup line, and maybe that is the point. But he says, is it hot in here, or is it just you? Like, I remember kids in high school saying that line. And I was like, that's... And she repeats it, like, sort of incredulous. Like, she's like, did you just say that to me? And he's like, if you like it, there's more where that came from. And then the much better response, because she goes, are you for real? And he's like, you know, I've been asked that many times by women a lot more naked than you. Yes. Is he like, he pulls the chair out and kind of like leans into it or whatever, kind of like arches his knee or something.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
he straddles the chair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That's how, like, yes, you know, and this is working.
And yeah, like, exactly. And he introduces himself as Sam Malone, and she's like, my name is being held. He goes, my name is Sam Malone. She goes, my name is being withheld for security reasons. And he's like, oh, that's very clever. Maybe it's too clever. What does that mean? He's like, what's that mean? He has to think about it. And she basically tells him to bug off. She's like, get me a drink and then get the hell away from me, more or less.
Well, the drink was the Manhattan, and then she wanted a cherry, and then she said, and then put a sock in it.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, well, whatever way you like it. You know, just want.
And then we get Frasier and the still pregnant Lilith coming in and sitting down with her. Frasier starts to tell this joke about a patient going to the psychiatrist's office, suffering from a disease. I forget the name of the disease, and then alcoholism. And Lilith corrects him that it's a brain tumor. And he says, well, you know, that part doesn't matter. And she goes, yes, brain tumor is funnier. And he goes, you know what? You're right. And then, like, later on, we cut away from them a little bit, and then we come back just to hear the punchline of the joke. And it's like, Frasier goes, I said 10 cc's, not Tennessee. And he starts to laugh. And actually, the Dr. Riedel actually laughs, too. So it must have been at least somewhat funny, because it's more than just a pity laugh. But then Frasier, he's not even sure if he got that punchline right. He's like, or was it Kentucky? And no, it's Tennessee, because it has to be a homonym of 10 cc's. So he's like,
yes. Yeah, I had no idea what joke that I never heard of anything like with those connotations in it. I'm like, I don't know that joke, but
right.
Yeah, whatever.
So Sam comes back with their drinks, and Frasier introduces Dr. Riedel to Sam, and he's like, she's a clinical psychiatrist and a fellow at Boston University. And Sam's like, well, thank God she's a woman here at Cheers. And then she steps away to use the payphone to make a call, and he's like, well, there's a free phone right here at the bar. And she's like, no, I need more privacy. He's like, I have a phone in my bedroom. As he kind of like leans out holding the banister of the bar. Give him some room. So and he kind of Sam kind of takes her seat as Frasier and Lilith get up to go to Melville's or whatever. And Frasier just kind of mutters, like, yeah, he agrees with Sam about how hot she is. And he's like, he maybe thinks Lilith is out of earshot, but much more likely is just completely forgotten Lilith is even there, because he says most women who get into psychiatry are real Bowsers. At which point Lilith just stops on a dime and turns around to look at him, and she's like, "Frasier, I can hear you, and so can your unborn child."
Yes. I know. That's a good one. And it goes, and then of course Colin's like, "Well, let's see him get out of this one," and then he starts quickly like, "Oh, I'm very sorry, and Anna, how about a trip to Tiffany's?"
On the way home, yeah. And she's like, "Good boy."
Yes. And then he does like this hoorah.
Yeah, like, this little flourish.
His hand. Yeah, a little flourish and everything. Yeah, you know, a little
polite clap for him. So Sam is still kind of looking forlornly down the hall, and he's like, "I really want that woman." But he's like, "Sam, she's carrying Dr. Crane's baby." And I noticed something as Sam is leaving, because Sheila, Dr. Riddell, took her drink with her to the phone, because that'll come back in a visual thing in a minute. Right. Frasier ordered a beer, of which he took maybe one sip before they go upstairs to Melville's, and Lilith, being pregnant, just ordered a mineral water or something like that. There's like a lime in there. And I noticed, I forgot that that's what she ordered, because she left her drink, and Sam actually takes a drink from her glass, a drink of water, and I was like, wait a minute, he's an alcoholic. Why is he, first of all, why is he drinking her drink? But also, I was like, what did she order? I was like, because I saw that, I was like, oh, wait. Of course, she's pregnant. She just ordered water. But it took me a minute. First, I was like, why is he drinking her drink? And also, he should not be drinking alcohol. And I was like, oh, wait. I was like, so that's safe. He would have been drinking water. But still, it's kind of like, why is he drinking from a customer's glass, even though they're friends?
Exactly. I didn't catch that. I'm glad you caught it. I caught that Frasier only had one drink, and then they cleared the table. And I'm like, one sip from the drink, and they cleared it.
Yeah, because usually he always has a bottle of water behind the bar. In fact, he drinks it a couple seconds later.
Right.
But yeah, I just know he took a drink from her glass. I was like, that's weird. But anyway, so I know. Yeah. So anyway, then, once he's behind the bar, like thinking about her, Cliff suggests that Sam approach Sheila on a professional level and see her as a patient. And he's like, that's actually a good idea. And Carla's like, yeah, who gave it to you, Cliff? And he's like, it's fine. It came from my brain. She's like, who gave you a brain? Or something like that.
Yes. No, she's like, hey, everyone, Cliff's got a brain. A new brain.
So they start talking about what could the problem be? What could Sam go like faking that she could diagnose? And Carla's like, she took her son to see the school psychiatrist and found out he has kleptomania. And Norm was like, did you get anything out of it? And she's like, a couple of pens and a leather appointment book. Yes. And Norm was like, well, you know, I've got this crippling fear of failure. And Carla's like, you are a failure. And he's like, oh, then I've licked it.
Yes.
He's like, pour me another one. He's like, I'll have a refill or something. And then Carla suggests impotence. And as soon as she said, like, the whole bar, everyone just, like, reacts like they heard a gunshot or something like that. Like this. They're like, no, we don't even want to hear that word out loud. And she says that the two things that women love is curing a man of impotence and then giving it back to him if he steps out of line. And Sam is like, no, I don't care how hot she is, I'm not going to say that. And at which point, Dr. Riddell finishes her phone call, comes back to the bar, eats the cherry very sensually from her Manhattan, and like plucks that out of her, puts the glass and plucks the cherry out of it, like in her lips. And he just kind of watches her walk off. He's like, all right, so I tell her I have impotence.
And it's interesting, that whole shot, too, because it's very quiet in the bar, except for that. I mean, they all the focus is on that, but it's very quiet. Like, there's hardly any even right. talking going on in that scene, and it's like, what?
Yeah. And then we cut to Dr. Riddell's office. She brings in Sam. She recognizes him instantly, of course, and she's like, okay, what's this going to be? And he kind of sits down on the couch, you know, trying to get comfortable. And he's like, she's like, all right, take your time. What's your problem? He's like, I don't even know if I can talk about it. And then, of course, he says, lately I haven't been able to get the old Evan Rude cranking. which because when I do these podcasts, I watch this with the subtitles on. And the subtitles provided by the iTunes or Apple TV shows or whatever version said the old Evan Root, like a name, like Evan Root cranking, and I was like, what AI software are they using, like to pick these up to transcribe this phonetically? Because I was like, that's yes.
not. They never obviously ever heard these slang terms before, right. So.
It's like, that's not a motor, but anyway. And she follows up, she's like, what are you talking about? He's like, his favorite shirt is a little light in the starch. And she's like, are you trying to say you're impotent? And he's like, oh, God. Like, again, like, with that reaction. Like, he clams up. He's like, please don't use that word. And she says, well, okay, talk about it. He's like, it's too painful to talk, but I could demonstrate it for you. And it's so, so obvious. And she's like, well, you know, you're in luck. I've got a colleague who can help you with this. Dr. Heinrich Mueller. And he leads a seminar on this. And he's like, well, what about you? She's like, no, no, no. Dr. Mueller is great. And don't worry, those charges linking him to the Gestapo were grossly exaggerated.
Now, you got that that there really was a Dr. Heinrich
Mueller.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So I don't know if that was,
You have to play history for some kids out there in the audience who might be listening, you know? So, that yes, he was a notorious Nazi war criminal, and he disappeared at the end of the war. Thank God. But, yeah. So,
probably in Argentina.
Yes, probably in Argentina. Well, I'm not going to get into the Boys of Brazil issue, but, yeah.
They all seem to go, but, yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, and she says that he'll have to go to this seminar in full view of, you know, about 20 other men, and of course all of the attending nurses, and declare, I'm Sam Malone, and I no longer function as a man. So she is just laying it on super thick, which I love that she does this and this. She's throwing it right back at him. And this, one of my favorite parts, this isn't my my home run, but it's close. He stops her at the door before she opens it. And he's like, wait, wait, wait. I didn't say impotent. I said impudent. Yeah, I'm a smart ass.
Yes.
That's such a... And she's like, oh, okay, great. Then the cure worked. And she's like, that'll be $150. You know, yes. Pay the receptionist on your way out. And he tries to admonish her for lying. He's like, yeah, that wasn't fair. And she's like, you're right. It was very unfair, considering how honest you were being.
Yes.
So then he admits that he made it up because he finds her attractive, and he just wanted to see more of her, and she's a little flattered by that, and she's like, not many men would come in here and humiliate themselves, make up a childish lie to spend 5 minutes with me. And he's like, I'm a romantic.
Yes.
And then she agrees to see him tomorrow night. And then as the scene ends, she takes out the tape recorder, and he's like, whoa, were you recording this? She's like, no. As soon as you came in, I knew you were lying, and I turned off the tape recorder. And he's like, thank you. And he starts to walk out the door, and everybody in the waiting room starts laughing at him. She goes, oh, when I turn the recorder off, I turn the intercom on.
Yes.
So he has to cover up his face and duck out of there fast. Now, this is the part that I said I didn't like. Like, I really liked their interaction in the scene. I liked that, like, she has him pegged instantly, and she just throws back. She knows exactly how to confront him with this BS and how to scare him and just shame him into coming clean right away. But then she falls for him. And I don't think that's earned. Like, when she agrees to go out on a date with him just because she kind of, like, she's like, it's almost like his charm works. So, like, he's rewarded for this behavior. And I think we know Sam well enough to know that he is a good guy and he would be a good date and this would be good. But I don't think at this point there's a good story reason to justify why she changes her mind about him. Like, I know they need to kind of get to the next point, but
right. This
just felt kind of lazy, and I can see the perspective that this makes her a weaker character, because I like her in this show, like, as a foil for Sam, because of how strong she is and how quick she is to throw his crap right back in his face and scare him with, like, I'll send you to my colleague, a Nazi doctor, and everything.
Yes.
All this stuff I really liked, but then when she's like, yeah, I'll go out on a date with you, I'm like, oh, come on, you're better than this, Sheila. And I didn't like that part. I thought that diminished her character. But we need that for what comes next. So
right, it's just. I mean, I'm going to throw this out. I mean, I don't know. It just. I mean, we know it's done for plot purposes. But I would just say maybe the character just hasn't gone on a date in a while, and just like, fine, you know, I'll give it a shot. This guy's a really not my type. Not, you know, not that I want to really maybe entertain this further, but I'm bored.
And yeah, and
let me do this. Yeah,
yeah, and there is an aspect of it that I like that we'll kind of come back to that I think right. an interpretation that could work, and we'll come to that right. because next after that scene we kind of come back to the bar and it's closing time. Chick Cliff, everybody has to. How does Carla say? He's like, you got to get home so you can come back for your 9 o'clock shift.
Yes. Something like that. Yes, and then they get into this right. story. Well,
yeah,
Cliff, go watch videos.
Yeah, Cliff invites Norman like, Woody back to his place to watch some videos. Some
videos.
Yeah. And well, Woody's excited. He's like, yeah, videos, I love that. And of course, whatever movies they thought they were going to watch, Cliff starts going, it's like, yeah, we've got one. Explain that these are home movies, the Vim. He's like, yeah, we've got one of me dressed as Peter Pan and Ma as Captain Hook tying me up and everything like that. As he's walking out the door and Norm was like, was this Halloween? Cliff was like, no, this was just a game they used to play to help me sleep. You know how teenagers are. And he goes up the stairs, and Norm just sits there for a minute. And he's like, no, I can't do this. And he starts to go back to the bar, and Woody has to pull him outside. He's like, no. It's like, we're doing this. He's like, I can't. So.
But it doesn't seem like, I mean, I know it's good for the joke's sake and everything, but like I really can't see, you know, Cliff's mom, like the actress they get her to play, you know, yeah. Frances, or, you know, like really being that type of person. But yeah, I know.
Sam and Sheila were upstairs in Melville's, and they come back down after their dinner. And Carla's asking Sam if he'll lock up the bar and everything, put everything away, because she wants to go home and take her kid, or she wants to tuck her kids into bed. And he's like, Carla, it's 2 a.m. She's like, oh, you're right. They're probably not home yet. She's like, don't forget to put the chairs up. He's like, we'll do it. And he's like, she goes, I know you will, but don't forget to put the chairs up. And Sheila confesses that she actually had a good date with Sam. And he's much more relaxed and comfortable than the men she typically goes out with, which again, kind of I think supports your theory that she's like, you know what, this Sam might be good for something. He is a different kind of guy than she's probably used to going out with people like Frasier and his brother Niles and that type of her colleagues and everything. So to see somebody like Sam so completely different may have some appreciable qualities. Yeah,
and you would go with the theory that Frasier had about her, that you don't see many probably men in psychiatry who might be as good looking as, you know, Sam.
Yeah, yeah, either. Exactly. Yeah.
Way. So it goes both ways.
Right. And Sam says he's glad she didn't come off like a doctor, like psychoanalyzing everything he did throughout the date. And she kind of says back, she's like, oh, you learn to keep that to yourself. And he's like, I mean, insinuating that she clearly was thinking about him in those terms. She was analyzing him. She just didn't tell. And then at this point, curiosity and his own insecurities are getting the better of Sam. And he wants to know what she really thinks, what her diagnosis is. And she's like, no, that's it. He's like, if you were thinking good things, she'd come right out and say, this guy is really together and I'm lucky to be with him. And boy, that hair. And this is like 2 episodes in a row that he's so fixated on his own hair. I love the continuation of this.
That's what I was saying. It's more like Sam from the early seasons a bit, you know, where he's got, you know, he's caring about his hair, you know, I can pretty much say any line to a woman and I can get her into bed, you know, that type of deal, you know, that he would be like, you know.
Right. And Sam just goads her into telling him her thoughts by saying that she doesn't really know him at all, and her evaluation is that all he thinks about and cares about and acts about are related to sex. And she says, without sex, he would shrivel up like an anchovy and die. And Sam goes, well, who wouldn't? He's like, that's it? There's no bad stuff? She's like, it's all bad. She calls him an aging Lothario who uses sex to cover up his insecurities, and he gets offended and upset, and he wishes she had lied to him, and she apologizes and suggests they just go back to her place and not think about it. And he's like, you still want to go to bed with me, even though sex is supposedly all I think about? And she goes, exactly. So I assume you're rather good at it. And he's like, you would have sex with someone you don't respect? And she's like, isn't that what you do with women? He's like, yeah, but I cover it up. I mean, how long have you lived in America, lady? It's like such a... And this is the part where, like, I think Sam's reaction and his offense again casts her in a negative light. And I don't think it necessarily goes as far as, like, slut shaming her or anything like that, but I think there was a better way of saying that, like, she's a strong sex positive character who's like, she's like, yeah, I can sleep with you and it doesn't mean anything. Like, I'm not going to get hung up. Right. I haven't fallen for your line. I know exactly what I'm getting in for. And I think that's, it's there, but you kind of have to dig a little bit into it because of Sam's reaction. I think he, if Sam is the one we sympathize with, we're really meant to kind of cast her in a bad light in the scene that, again, I don't think is necessarily deserved because she's not wrong here.
Right.
Again, I'm of two minds because, like, on the one hand, I love this dialogue. I love this whole sequence, this line. But it's kind of, yeah, I don't like their depiction of her, but I think there was a, they could have salvaged it. Like, she could have been a strong character and had pretty much the exact same role in this episode without coming off so negatively. But, like, by the end of it, like, she even kind of offers herself up as a booty call, to use the phrase and everything, and he's like, shouts up at her, that's so pathetic. And I'm like,
yeah,
come on. But anyway, it didn't ruin the episode, but it's just kind of like, I'm not happy with that part.
I understand. And like, I think it's, I mean, the main joke is that we're supposed to take it like this is probably how a woman would feel, like it, like how Sam would come across to them, like, you know, as, you know, this is things that's happened that Sam's done to the women, and now he's getting it thrown back at him, but it's coming from a real attractive woman, and he's kind of seeing, like, right, really, I've been doing these things, and now it's offended me, now it's got my guard up and everything, and he doesn't really, really, really see that, and we're supposed to catch that at the end, you know, but, and like I said, I think for her, I understand what you're saying, it's like, she's supposed to be really a smart character, but it's kind of like, the motivations don't really match the smartness, right. And I know that's what you're saying, basically, and I understand, and it has to kind of pay off the episode in the way it does at the end. It goes back to Rebecca and Sam's friendship, and that's what it's going to end with. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's something that, yeah, you wish they could have thought of a way to make the still get to the same point, but doesn't come across as
well. Because the other aspect of it that I don't think they quite nail is the whole idea was that all he wanted to do is sleep with her. And she's right, giving him that option. She gives him the green light to do that.
Right.
And he takes this moment to feel morally superior. And that's what kind of gets in his way of accomplishing the one goal he actually wanted. And it's like,
right,
what was it you actually wanted out of this relationship? You can get it if you just shut up and stop feeling like so self-righteous in this moment. But
yeah. I don't know if he started I mean, they don't say this, but I'm just wondering if it was more that he might have thought of, like, this could go somewhere, this relationship. And it came past a point where, you know, that it was more just sleeping with her. I don't know. I mean, we don't know. We didn't see the dinner date or anything. Right. But, I mean, you know, that could be what was happening. And now it came back to, like, you know, why was she thinking about the, what, you know, you weren't saying much. Were you just analyzing me while I was talking during dinner? And that could have been why, because it was something like, I really like this girl. You know, I should say this woman. I shouldn't just say girl, but I really like this woman. And I maybe progressively want to have a relationship with her, not just be a one-night stand. And I think that's what, at the end, what is got him back, because it was going to be just a one-night stand. He's like, no, I'm better than just, you know, a one-night fling. And I think that's, I think that was the biggest thing that they were trying to jump to at the end.
Potentially, yeah. So. Yeah, I think it could be. Anyway, then as he's feeling down and low at this point, Rebecca comes out of the office. She'd been in there this entire time. And she's leaving. She tells him not to lock up, and he kind of just makes this, like, little groaning sound. He asks if his life is void of any meaning, and she's like, yeah, don't forget to lock up. And he tells her that his date accused him of not having anything in his life except for meaningless sex. He's like, oh, by the way, you look hot tonight. It's like, <"Great." laughs> And she struggles to help him find something in his life that's not about women. She's like, what about your job? And he's like, it's a great way to meet women. She's like, what about your car? He's like, chicks dig the car. It's a babe magnet. She's like, what about sailing? He goes, babes on waves. And he's like, forget it. There's just, I'm nothing but a hot machine of love or something. Yes. And he starts to walk away, and she's like, oh, wait, Sam, what about the Stooges? And he goes, they're okay. They're over at Cliffs. He's like, and she goes, no, you like the Three Stooges. And she's like, do women like the Three Stooges? He's like, no, they don't. He's like, some of them actually think they're stupid. And it gets kind of defensive. Yes. It kind of takes him a minute, but because he's walking to the bathroom, and then he comes back, he's like, wait a minute. He's like, that is another interest besides sex. And then he does some of the Three Stooges, like, shtick and everything, like, with the hands and the knuckles, and ends up, like, slapping her nose and kind of hurting her more than he intended to. And he's like, hey, it's funny, do it back to me. And she kind of gets his nose between her knuckles and winds her hand back, and it cuts to black just as we hear the slap. And he's like, hey, the Stooges don't bleed.
Well, and to go with the ending on it, like, Sam, I don't know. I know they had to end it this way, but, like, you know, what's the other things he's been passionate about? Well, I mean, what got him into sports? You know, it's like that he was passionate about sports.
Right.
You know, I know. I understand. It's the end of the episode, and they were just thinking, like, all it is women and sex. And that's basically his, until the Stooges, you know.
There's some great moments in this. There's a lot I like, and I don't want to say they did her dirty, but I think they could have handled Dr. Rydell a little bit better. On the other hand, she's a one-off character. She wasn't meant to leave a really strong, lasting presence on the show. But I really liked her scenes with Sam. I think they had great chemistry. If they had decided to actually make her a longer-term character, I think that actually would have worked and could have been really interesting, at least for, like, maybe a couple episodes, you know, like something like that. But I think
Sam does have a type. He just doesn't realize. He does like strong, intelligent women.
Those are the women that he falls for. Yeah, women who actually challenge him and push him out of his
Diane,
comfort zone.
Yeah,
Rebecca,
and what was Kate McGrew's character?
Oh, the councilwoman,
the mayor. It's the councilwoman. That's where I'm. Janet something.
Eldridge. Eldridge.
Blanking. Janet Eldridge. Yes, yeah. That's it. That's what I was trying to remember. But yes, that's, I mean, he, in the long run, those are the type of women he's really attracted to and likes. And that's what I said. I think at the end, he was starting to maybe start to fall for a bit and not just went past being a one night stand. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think that was why he got his guard up and everything. And I know it made her look like weaker, that she just ran to have, just sleep with the guy and move on. You know, she wasn't looking for a relationship with that type of person. That's not what she goes for. But as a one night stand, as, you know, as a hookup or whatever the kids call it nowadays, because I'm not in that realm anymore.
I'm sure they don't call it a booty call, which I refer to. I'm sure they haven't called it that in 15 or 20 years. But
whatever. Yeah, so we're showing our age and our way past that type of thing. Yes. Yeah, but overall, I mean, I still think it was a funny episode. It had a lot
too.
Of good lines.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
I really didn't have a home run line. You kind of got into it. It was like with him saying, like, at the end, like, going to bed and, you know, and having sex is like, you know, so you just so you know, have respect for them. And the warrant's like, where have you been? You know, I cover it up. That's all I do. Yeah, exactly. You know? That was my home run line. And MVP for me was Sam. I mean, it's a Sam episode. It has to be him.
I agree that, yeah, this was totally a Sam episode. Like there's barely a B plot in this one. Like, I actually don't know if you could say there is a B plot. Like, there's other than the guys going to Cliff's house, which is a 15-second scene or something like that. So yeah, there's not really. It's really just only Sam's story, and so it's definitely a Sam episode. For Norm's tab, just really quick before the home runs, he did have 3 beers in this episode, so he has 671 for the series. For the home runs, The three that I kind of really liked, I think my favorite one is when he's coming in. It's like, if it was good, you'd be like, boy, this guy's really together. I'm lucky. And boy, that hair. just because that was the whole thing in the episode Hot Rocks that was on before this one, where he made Rebecca compliment his hair. And he was like so insecure about that it's continuing. But I also loved the part when Rebecca's like, what about the Stooges? And he's like, they're okay. They're over at Cliff's house. and then just when he's in the office and she's like, I've never had somebody make a fool of themselves just to spend 5 minutes with me. And he's like, I'm a romantic. And I just... Still a funny episode as they all tend to be. So I'm glad you could help me cover this one. Any other projects or things that you're working on that our listeners should know?
I'm not really the one of the podcast people. I'm just friend of the network. Enjoy all the shows on the network. The only thing I do is if you follow me on Facebook, which is under Daniel Ulrich. I'm still doing this year. I'm for Facebook. I've been doing my movies for 1984 and 1989. So it's getting at the time of recording this, we're getting to the summer weekly releases. So like the summer of 1989. You really know it. It's a huge summer. I mean, there is a lot of major good films that come out that year. And in 1984, there's still a lot of good ones, too. So I've just been doing little retrospectives on that, getting my little movie opinion on them. Mostly because, you know, you still find is, especially when you get to like 84 and that, there's a lot of movies that just like lost in time, you know, as I like to say. It just went down this rabbit hole of obscurity that you only a few people would have to remember. You know, some films you've seen back on HBO back in the day or cable, and then now disappeared, and like they're not on any streaming service, not on any DVD release or anything, because they probably got released on VHS and that was it. They never died from there. So, you know, it's just funny just to go back and look at that and like, oh, this film, I remember this film. Or what is this film? I don't know this film at all. You know, just like, I don't remember this one. So, you know, then I follow that up. They found channels that have old Siskel and Ebert episodes. So,
oh, cool.
I post that at the end, you know, if someone has it on YouTube. So I post that, the link on YouTube, because it's also interesting trying to show like people
the contemporary
in the, yeah, it's a real movie. Yes, yeah, like real, and just like how real good film criticism is now. Yeah. Now online you get too many yahoos out there and who think they know, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever. And so it's to get better film criticisms, and you can kind of see like, were they right, were they wrong, you know, at 35 40 years later,
right,
you know, is it something that holds up still? Yeah. You know, and plus there's little things in there that the old champion films, again, for us when we were young and watching them back then, those films were old. Now with all my films, they're close to 70 to 80 years old that they champion. And it's like, wow, you know, that's something that probably nobody, unless you're really a movie buff, watches now. So
right.
It's very interesting. And that's why I like to do that, just because I'm a movie fan. So,
gosh, I think Beverly Hills Cop was in 1984, and that's like one of my top 10 favorite movies. Yeah,
yep.
Purple Rain was 1984. Wasn't Ghostbusters 84?
Yep. Yeah, Ghostbusters 84. So what I've already hit, like just this past week, 2 weeks ago they had, this past week was The Natural. And a few weeks, a week before that was 16 Candles.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, you know, I mean, that's a big one. But, yeah, you're talking about films coming out in June of 84 that are, like, the big ones. Yeah. So, and then 89, the summer is dominated by Batman. I mean, sure. That's, like, the biggest one. But, I mean, you still had Lethal Weapon 2. You still had
Indiana Jones, Last Crusade. Ghostbusters 2, I think. Ghostbusters 2, actually, was 89,
Yeah, that's what's interesting. Like, 5 years later, even though, you know, hey, almost the same time period, you know, 5 years later, these Ghostbusters came out. Then, like I said, you got Star Trek 5, which
was one
of
the James Bond movies in 89?
Yes, License to Kill was in 89. So, yep.
Cool. A lot of fun. All right. Well, thank you very much, Danny, for coming back on Cheerscast and helping me cover this episode. And as always, listeners, thank you very much for joining me. Thanks to everybody who listens to Cheerscast and supports the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Well, Sam, come on. Why don't we just forget the whole thing and go back to my place?
What? You still want to go to bed even though sex is supposedly the only thing I have in my life?
Exactly. And so I assume you're rather good at it.
You would actually have sex with somebody you don't even respect?
Well, isn't that what you do with women?
Yeah, but I cover it up. I mean, how long have you lived in America, lady?